Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Thursday morning. It is the 12th of November, 13 minutes past 9 o'clock, and a real delight to have you with us this morning as we move forward to talk about what's going on in the world. We have a wonderful panel to do it with. Let me introduce them, and we'll get started. Just a reminder, you can be a part of the discussion, as always. All you have to do is email us. It's panel at wamc.org, panel at wamc.org. WAMC's Alan Shartok is in the house. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I am indeed in the house. That's exactly where I am, and I'm delighted to be here and with you and all the audience. Great to see you all.
It is good, and yes, in the house is a good place to be as we see these frightening numbers go up. So, yeah, we'll all take it easy and be safe. I am thrilled to welcome back a publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, Ira Fussfeld. Good morning, Ira. How are you, sir?
I'm okay, Joe. Good to talk to you again.
Very nice to talk to you and checking in. UAlbany lecturer in Africana Studies, Jennifer Burns, is here. Good morning, Jennifer.
Oh, good morning, everyone.
Nice to have you here as always. And Linda Ellerbe joins us, Peabody and Emmy Award-winning journalist. And we're always thrilled to have Linda with us. Good morning, Linda. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. Well, I am thrilled you are all here. We have a lot to talk about. And we'll go with the politics first, and then we'll start, and then we'll talk about COVID. So here are some of the here are some of the stories that are going on as we try to figure out what happened with the, you know, the election is still going on in some quarters of the world, where or of the country, or maybe of the world too, actually. but the president is yet to concede. Meanwhile, Joe Biden goes on as president-elect of this country. He picked Ron Klain to be his White House chief of staff, a longtime Biden confidant and a veteran Democratic operative who coordinated the Obama administration's response to Ebola. So he was picked yesterday. Meanwhile, the counting of ballots continues, especially in Georgia, where they will recount their presidential ballots by hand, as the Trump campaign requested. Officials said it was unlikely to erase the 14,000-plus vote lead that Joe Biden has. Meanwhile, enter Senator James Lankford, who is a Republican from the state of Oklahoma. He sits on a key Senate oversight committee. He says he will, quote-unquote, step in if Biden doesn't start receiving daily policy briefings by the end of the week. For the president's part, he has been mostly out of sight. He attended a Veterans Day ceremony at Arlington National Cemetery yesterday, and that was his first public appearance in nearly a week. Joe Biden also, he visited the Korean War Memorial in Philadelphia. Other activity that the president has been involved in since the election, the president has installed a group of hardline officials at the Pentagon and the National Security Agency. Experts say it could be a prelude to punishing Iran, declassifying sensitive documents, or withdrawing troops from Afghanistan. All that from the New York Times. All right, Alan, that's where we are. What do you think?
Well, Joe, I used to read books, and they were always referring to a kind of car, and they would describe it as what I always thought was a coupe, but they named it a coupe. Is that right? Is coupe the right pronunciation of that type of car? Well, in any case,
I don't think so. It's a coupe, right?
Nancy Drew drove a burgundy one. I remember that.
A burgundy one, what, Linda?
A coupe?
I don't know. I only read it. Like many words I learned as a child, I had never heard them said. So I was one of the few people who had sympathy with Donald Trump, as I would with any six-year-old child who didn't know how to pronounce Yosemite. As a child reading the comic books, I'd never heard the word. As a little girl in Texas, I thought it was Yosemite Sam.
Yeah.
But then again, I was a little girl. Not president.
So the reason I raise this is, I don't want to get in trouble with Rosemary, but I have the distinct impression that Trump either may try something like a coup, or otherwise known as a coupe, or just wants us to think he may want to do that. which is another double, triple, quadruple fake out of the First Order. So I'm not quite sure what he's up to. But I am scared. I am worried. I think the installation of his troop, of his top people at the Pentagon, is a very bad sign. The idea that his number two, his Secretary of State, is saying we're going to have a transition to another Trump administration when there isn't one iota of proof of any of that being possible. So one wonders about this. Now, when I first brought this up, which was several days ago, I got pretty well poo-pooed, and that this was a possibility. I didn't say it was going to happen. I said it was a possibility that this could happen. And I think when the sister of the president and the niece of the president say he means what he says, and he said he would not accept the outcome of the election unless he won, I think it's possible. I think it's still possible, because if this is all over, and he's out, he knows he has a distinct possibility of going to jail, which is exactly where he ought to go if he's committed any crimes. And that's that for me for now.
You know, to your very important point, it's toupee and not toupe, right?
Yes. hold your letters, everybody. Hold your letters, everybody.
I'm sorry. What, Ira? What did you say? I apologize.
You stole my line.
Oh,
that's
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Poo or poupe.
Yeah, poo or poupe. Right, exactly.
Frap or frappe.
We'll figure it out by the end of the show. I know
I'm
we will.
Sure we'll get 100 letters.
Ira, how are you? What do you think?
Well, I'm all right. Listen, I want to preface what I'm going to say by laying a little groundwork. And for people who have heard me on this program or on the Media Project or know me personally, you will know that the glass is always half empty with me. I'm the sort of guy who hears the weather forecast, and if they say 20% chance of rain, I'll bring an umbrella. So I always expect the worst. And after Biden was elected, people close to me were annoyed that I wasn't more triumphant about it, more happy about it. And what I've been saying is I will be happy to beat the band when I see Biden on that platform being inaugurated. In the meantime, I take all of this stuff seriously that Trump and his thugs are trying to pull here. It concerns me greatly. And as with Alan, I'm particularly concerned about what happened in the Defense Department. I can only presume he's up to no good, because otherwise he has 2 months to go. Why screw around with it now? And what damage he can do and has already done with another 60 some odd days left is a concern. I don't know if there'll be a coup, but I don't know. I don't rule anything out with this guy. We've seen since day one that just when you thought you've seen the worst, something else comes down the pike. So we need to continue to be vigilant about this and hope for the best.
Linda.
Well, you know, I've been listening all week to Alan and Rosemary and you, Joe, and everybody else that's been on. And golly, this is one of the few times that I guess I come down on both sides. That's really odd. I do see danger in this. I do agree with Alan that there is danger here. On the other hand, there's another part of me that wants to sit and say, let's not give it oxygen. The more oxygen we give it, the more it likely become a self-fulfilling prophecy. I still have to believe, from years of covering Congress and knowing Joe, that it is inconceivable that Joe Biden is not on the phone with Senate Republicans during this time. That being the case, and knowing how the Senate works, there's a part of me, and perhaps this is merely the cockeyed optimist part, that has to believe that there is some arbitrary, if not quite fixed, date coming that they're waiting for, where the Republicans are going to acknowledge that Trump lost and that Joe Biden is the president-elect of the United States. And now, what that date might be, well, you know, are they waiting for these lawsuits to continue to fail, which they've all done? Are they waiting for a recount? What are they waiting for in order to say he's had enough time, he's out? I think beyond that, we have bigger concerns. Even if he's out, Ira, this is where I come in being the pessimist you are. I don't think he's out, even if he goes. I think you're talking about something like, someone suggested this in the news like a week ago, a virtual confederacy, where his voice keeps a whole thing going, and perhaps it is almost a secession, but not legally and not in fact, but virtually. And so it goes on. That's where I am, which means I come to you today with no information and just a lot of mixed opinions.
But it's hard not to have mixed opinions at this time because so much of it is this, is it a crisis? Is it inconvenient? What is it? And is it just silly and it'll all go? You find yourself saying, oh, well, I was feeling really about it, but this senator from Oklahoma, who I've never heard of, said he'll step in, so that's good.
I believe this will happen. I guess I have to believe it will happen. Like everyone else, I'm afraid of the rot right now that continues with Trump in charge. But I think right now, we're not even a week away from declaring Biden victory from the Pennsylvania. That was Saturday. Today is Thursday. I think allowing a little transparency, it's not going to change Trump. He is never going to concede. I don't care. He doesn't have to. But it may change some minds in the country when they see that the lawsuits went nowhere and the vote counts didn't change anything and that it was allowed to happen, that we allowed the Republicans to have this grace period to say, look, here, try your silly stuff. It didn't work. The election was legitimate. Now,
I want to,
Linda. What if he wags the dog with Iran, for example?
Well, these are things we've worried about for 4 years. Look, from the very beginning when he was inaugurated, I was saying on the air that if this guy melted down, he would take every one of us with him if he could, and that when you corner a rat, the rat will lash out, and it doesn't matter if the rat's going down with it. I have no question in my mind that if he could overturn the government, he would. If he has to take us to a war as a way he thinks it will stay in office or at least save him something, he will. I believe he is capable of all of these things and more. I think he should be physically restrained at this point by other Republicans, but no, I believe he would do any of these things, Alan. I agree with you on that.
Okay, but speaking of which, I believe that if I have any insight into Trump's character, he's scared to death that he's going to go to jail if he gets out of here.
Which is why he's dangerous.
That's right. That's exactly right. And there's the rat in the corner, and ouch, mm-hmm. It hurts.
I want to get to Jennifer Burns. Just one quick note of analysis that I heard last night, which is that what they're working on now is to get him not to concede, but to say that he'll let things go on. But there's still something funny about this race, but we'll move on. Okay.
I think the moment that he mentions 2024, that is code for the fact that he knows he's leaving.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the gateway. Jennifer, what do you make of all this?
I think that, how do I say this politely?
You don't have to.
Okay, well.
I mean, not rudely, but.
Well, not on my account. Well, we've been focused on how Trump may be in Putin's pocket. But I've been thinking a lot about these conversations where Trump is saying, they're not talking about the bounties on soldiers' heads and those things. And I'm wondering if sometimes Trump's conversations with Putin are really more about Trump getting advice on how to do exactly what he's doing now, which is to delegitimize voting and democracy and to do whatever he can to retain his own power in the country, even if that means bringing down democracy. The other thing is, I don't think he is necessarily looking to get the military involved in, say, a coup, but rather sending the message to his base, as we saw earlier in Michigan, where you had people storming, you know, the courthouses and things like that, you know, over the mask mandate, or the local militias and the Proud Boys who are coming out to put down the Black Lives Matter movement, like we saw in Kenosha and what happened. So I think it's directed at the ordinary citizens to go take over, rather than him employing, you know, using the Pentagon domestically or using military troops in America to do so. And I think that is out of Putin's playbook. That scares me more than his illegal nature in trying to use the Department of Justice and other things like that.
You know, that's a fascinating point, because we saw Trump call for the locking up of his political opponents, right?
Right.
We saw that. And mm-hmm. and it wasn't that long ago, and that is right out of the Putin playbook. So far, Trump hasn't been able to do that with the American voting system or democracy. But is there any question that if he had his way, he would? No.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Our panel this morning, Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Jennifer Burns, and Linda Ellerbe. We welcome your letters as well. Always a big part of the program. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll get to those letters and more conversation about, yes, politics and, of course, the coronavirus and the climbing numbers that we are encountering as well. All of that and much more. First, we're going to go to news from the BBC. Your letters at panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Playing Neil Young this morning. It's his 75th birthday. That's why we're playing Neil Young. And don't want you to think of any other reason we'd be playing it. He's 75 years old, and we celebrate his birthday today with his music throughout the program. Well, you know, we talk about a lot of things, and people obviously react to it. Susan wants me to tell Linda that Nancy Drew drove a blue roadster.
Oh, God, that's right. It was her friend George who and it was a maroon coupe, not a burgundy.
I never knew.
Did I get that right, Susan?
I never knew what a roadster was, but she had one, so I wanted one then in the 70s.
She's right. She had the blue roadster, and her girlfriend, George, I'll say that again, or else her father, I don't remember, but a maroon coupe was involved, or coupe.
Susan also says,
or maybe her father wore a maroon toupee.
We don't know. I'm sure, again, people will check in. All right. We also go to Mary, who says, I'm sure you'll get plenty of mail on this. In French, the accent over the E at the end of the word means the E is pronounced A. Without the accent, one pronounces all the letters up to the E. Toupee has two E's. That's different. I'd also like to remind the panel that the exalted Bill Clinton issued a number of controversial pardons on his last day in office. So, see, they took both tracks there.
No, he certainly did, and some of them really stunk.
Annie writes, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
It's just about toupee, so go ahead.
I don't care. No, please continue. I have something I'll say, but I'll wait.
Okay. Annie says, you're talking about two different French words, a coup d'etat, which is pronounced coup. The car with no accent and a silent E is pronounced coupe. All right. nobody cares about the election, by the way.
What about the chickens? What about the chicken show?
That's a coupe. Yeah, no, a coupe, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Chicken. No, it's a coupe. Chicken coupe. it's quite a dish.
Jay says, although it never pays to disagree with Alan, I don't think Trump could ever become dictator of America. The factors that brought Hitler to power in post-World War I Germany only partially exist here in America today. First, America is genetically defiant. Second, although Trump may have gotten almost half of the votes that were cast, I doubt he has the heart of over half of all Americans, whether they voted or not. And lastly, America is not a one people such as Japan or more or less the people of Germany. more lightly, Trump and his anointed Republican legislators will start a civil war that will cut the baby in half and solve global warming and global overpopulation the hard way.
He's probably right. I mean, never, not during any part of this, have I said there would be a coup. I'm saying he's certainly making it look like there could be a coup. And do I think he's got the persona and the character to be able to do it if he had a chance of doing it? Yes, I do. So there's that.
Well, I agree with that.
Okay. Let me go to Ira and then Ira and then Linda. Go ahead.
I was just going to say I agree with that, but I think we'll all agree that coup or no coup, the amount of damage that Trump is doing to this country on top of what he's already done by fostering the kinds of delaying tactics that he's doing is just so significant. You wonder how we're going to get out from under it. By the way, while Linda was reading Nancy Drew, I was reading the Hardy Boys, and I believe they had a roadster.
Okay. There.
A roadster. You're right, Ira. You're right.
A roadster. And by God, I hope you're right, because otherwise that's all the letters we're going to get. Linda, to your point.
Well, first of all, it's nice that you have listeners who read. that is more than much of talk radio in this country can say. Now, having had that little dig, I think both Ira and Alan are right in what Trump could do, would do, if he could do. I think that this is a time that we can actually stand back and look and say, wait a minute, it has not happened. The Proud Boys are not in the streets. There are no pitchforks yet. Why not? And it really hasn't happened. It might. I don't think it will, but it might. But it is good news that it hasn't happened. I'm not certain that the base followers who favor violence, I don't know what they've been waiting for. I would have think they'd already be out there. And they haven't. That is helpful. That is good news.
Jennifer?
I think they're waiting for the final word from Donald Trump.
Me too.
Remember that comment with the stand back and stand down? That's what they're waiting for.
Yep. So how do we prepare for that, I guess, is the question.
Don't. We are the good guys, and we have to be the good guys here. What would you suggest, that we go out and arrest people that disagree? I think we are preparing for that in every way. The sense of moving forward with the government of transition, we have a president-elect who doesn't need a guided tour of the White House, nor any of the departments in government. So I don't believe he's being particularly hurt by it. I think, and I agree with Ira, the American people are being hurt by it. I think the courts are doing their job so far. I think the states are doing their job. I think this is how we prepare for it. What I don't think is suddenly all of we Democrats or we liberals go out and go to our gun stores. I don't think that's a good idea.
I love what Joe said. I love what Joe said about the Oklahoma senator who I've never heard of. I've never heard of before.
This guy.
Well, all of a sudden, at least one man of courage, other than Mitt Romney, comes out and says, "Don't do this. Just don't do this." And I think that this is a great sign that maybe some spinal rejuvenation is going on over there.
And so to getting to that point, and Linda, when I was asking about what we do yesterday, the big word of the day was vigilance. And because people were writing in and saying, you know, what do we do while this is all happening? So it does come back to that vigilance.
We writhe and watch.
That's right. That's exactly right. And you're sort of watching at all corners and hoping you know or know what's going on. But there's so many plates spinning in so many different places, which I'm going to ask this as a question, but it seems to me anyway that what Joe Biden is doing as far as being calm, cool, and collected during all of this seems to be the right way to go. Right, Alan?
Without doubt, it's the right way to go. I mean, I am so impressed with his behavior and how he smiles at the right time and he shows strength at the right time and he's organizing his people in the right way. I think I think this is exactly why he was chosen by the Democrats to be their candidate. And look at how it's paying off right now. As Linda, I think, just said, he doesn't need a tour of the White House. He doesn't need a tour of any of it. You know, it is really, in some ways, a third Obama term. And the pieces will get picked up. I think he's doing a brilliant job.
Jennifer?
I agree. You know, it reminds me a lot of the civil rights workers when you go back and you look at the 50s and 60s and King's style of nonviolent direct action, that you let the other side's chaos continue to be shown while you continue to organize and continue to put plans in place. And I think Biden's doing a great job of that.
Ira.
Yes, excuse me, I agree. I think referencing Alan's point about the Trump being afraid about going to jail, I think there's a salient question that I asked when we did the media project this morning, and that is, do you think they have free Wi-Fi in the Otisville prison? Because he's going to need it.
Is Otisville a federal prison or a state prison? That's what I thought when you said that.
Well, maybe not. Isn't that where they sent Cohen, no?
I think Otisville is a federal facility, and if he gets convicted of anything, it's going to be by the state guys, Cyrus Vance.
Oh, good point.
Linda, anything on that?
I was actually paying so much attention. I'm just listening to some people smarter than I. No, I believe what the Jones behavior has been.
What station do you have, Michelle?
Go ahead, Linda.
I believe that Biden's behavior is the epitome of what Michelle once said, if they go low, we go high. This is why the people of the United States elected this man president right now. I mean, somebody in Atlantic said on the Atlantic staff last week said something that I thought was quite apt. They said, Joe's boring, but in a very good way.
That's so good.
And it does seem to be a good way.
I don't think we need our impatience. I don't think our patience needs to at least match his, at least for now. It's not yet been a week.
As you pointed that out earlier, and I thought to myself, my God, it has only been a week, but it seems like a long
time. Not yet. This is Thursday.
Well, that's right, Saturday. So it hasn't even been a week yet, and the point being that we had like 2 days of celebration, and then it just faded pretty quickly. I'm sure it'll come back, though, right?
Well, the day he's inaugurated, it's going to
come back. January 20th.
Yeah. Right.
1 minute after midnight, he becomes a trespasser, illegal trespasser.
And he gets taken out.
Removed from buildings.
By the elbows.
Angela says, let's see, Barbara says, go Linda. The day after the election, a lot of people were all doom and gloom prematurely. Listen to Linda. Do not give the faux coup any more oxygen. All right. We go to Carrie.
You think anybody was saying that in Hitler Germany? And they were saying it. The guy's a nut. We don't want to, don't give him any, don't talk about him. No, I think we have to be very alert here. Really alert.
No, I do too, Alan. When I said don't give him more oxygen, I did not mean the alert. A man named Reuven Frank, for whom I worked and who taught me so much, once told me, he said, the whole lesson of Hitler's Germany is it never pays to ignore a dictator. And I believe
that.
But I believe that vigilance is ours to keep, and we must. But I don't believe that we need be defeatist about, here comes the coup, here comes the coup.
Watch, I agree with you.
Wait, you know, trust but verify. In this case, don't trust and still verify.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with our discussion. We'll move on. I want to talk about COVID as well and head down that path. And we'll take your letters on all subjects. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. 9:49 on this Thursday morning. It's the 12th of November. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Jennifer Burns, and Linda Ellerbe join us, making up the panel this morning. And as I mentioned before the break, we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Kerry says Donald Trump may in his own mind believe he's saving our democracy in much the same way Nicolas Cage did in National Treasure. where he was saving the Constitution by stealing and protecting it. He may be implementing his only I belong here in this office at this moment, only I can fix, dot, dot, dot. We go to Angela, and with this letter, we switch subjects and start talking about COVID. Angela says, can someone please explain to me Andrew Cuomo's 10 p.m. decision regarding restaurants, bars, etc.? For the life of me, it makes no sense. It's almost as if he's placating local businesses while giving the appearance of making a safe choice for state residents. Shouldn't we be more concerned about when these establishments are open during peak dining and drinking hours? Please explain this decision to me, and thank you.
Governor Murphy of New Jersey was on one of the programs this morning, and he said that the reason that they have those cutoff times was because later in the evenings, the restaurants slowly morph into bars and clubs, and people have their guards down and thus their masks down, and they're trying to avoid those kinds of gatherings.
But the point of the letter writer, I think, is a good one, too, because it does not, you do have your busy dining hours, number one, and so you have that fact. But also you have, well, don't have a family gathering over 10 people. Well, obviously you're going to have or could potentially have many more people in a rather confined space in a restaurant, too, which isn't your close family.
I think earlier in the day they're more sober, literally and figuratively.
Alan, what do you think?
You know, I'm a bit of a Cuomo interviewer, and I fully will ask him this to explore with him, but I think that the letter writer has a good point. My druthers would be close them or not, but right now we've seen the polling on this and the rest. People are just sick to death of having to stay home, and if you're a good politician, you better understand that there are limits on what you can ask from people.
Jennifer?
You know, I agree. I don't understand fully the 10 p.m. and how that changes things, but I do think it sends the message that, one, things do need to change a little bit, and two, people need to be aware and thinking about their behavior all hours of the day, everywhere they go still, especially going into the holiday season as we're seeing COVID cases are rising everywhere.
Linda?
I think we're looking at it from the wrong end. You know, the other end of the bottle, whatever analogy you want to use there. Twice today, you just said, let's switch subjects from politics to coronavirus. Politics and coronavirus are not separate subjects and have not been from the beginning and are likely to never be separate subjects. Look, let's look at the facts. We just heard the BBC News. What did they say? Europe, where they're starting to crack down and making people wear masks again, the rates drop. Now, we already know this. The simple facts of this virus are where you wear masks, the rates are better. Where you don't wear a mask, the rates go up. The infection rates go up. Now, where has most of the mask wearing not been? It's been where people supported Donald Trump because Donald Trump said, gee, this is not going to pass, blah, 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 blah. There's no reason for masks. Blah, blah. We seem to play this yo-yo game, and we in the media keep seeming to be reporting it as news every time politics trumps science, the infection rates go up. When it doesn't, the infection rates go down. This seems to me just so obvious that I'm not sure why we keep being surprised by this. As for the dinner versus the late-night drinkers, well, the late-night drinkers are likely, you say, to take their mask down. People have to take their mask down to eat. And that's the early crowd. Okay, so those two things wash out in my mind. This is entirely about politics. Entirely. All of the opening and closing and opening and closing has always had a political factor in it from the very beginning of this.
Economic and political, of course, and which, of course, economy, political as well. But the point or one of the things, of course, that comes into this particular conversation is the numbers that we're seeing that are so frightening, that every record that we had, this is the worst it's ever been. Right now is the worst it's ever been since this
People
virus
are tired.
Took hold.
You were right when you said that. They're exhausted from this. However, that doesn't make it okay for politicians to say, well, okay, if you're tired of this, gee, we don't want you to be tired because we need your votes, and we also need the economy working. So let's still put it in a little way on this. Let's not do what we know has to be done to stop this virus. Shut things down and make people stay home.
Brilliantly said, Linda. You're exactly right. Now, let's put ourselves inside the head of Andrew Cuomo. And we say, okay, so we know that people understand that if you wear a mask, what you just said, we're all going to be better. We also know that people are tired of it. They don't want to do it anymore. So they want both. They want to be able to say, hey, you know, wear a mask, and I know it's important, and don't go out. And then they also are saying, but I want to, in which case, that's a whole different story, and the politician
has to
figure out how to deal with it.
Well, they have to stop being Donald Trump.
I'm sorry?
You can't just say, I want to, and call yourself a grown-up.
Okay.
Well, I also think things would be different if there was a stimulus package that was signed and in play here, too. Because the other part is people are really relying, especially going into the holiday season here, on the jobs that are opening up and the seasonal hiring that, you know, I don't know how vast it will be, but I'm seeing signs at a lot of places for it. And, you know, people need to eat, and I don't mean the customers going to the restaurant, but I mean people who are working there and in working other places. So if we were to have another shutdown without any kind of stimulus package in place, what would happen? So I think that's also part of the conversation that we need to include here, that people need to have jobs.
Right.
Or they need to have a stimulus
when
package
they,
that's going to help
the
them.
History of this very, when they write the history of this this disease 10, 20, 50 years from now, I think historians are going to look back and the question that they're going to ask more than any other is, why didn't people wear masks? I mean, Linda described it earlier how stupid it is, and it's just amazing to me. And we know that the blame that Trump bears regarding this, but at the end of the day, people need to make their own decisions. And how, in the face of what most of the people in this country see around them, that people are choosing not to wear masks, which is such a wearing them being such an easy thing to do, and we know that it helps cut down the disease, if not eliminate it entirely. Why people are not doing it is something that I'm never going to quite understand.
Bill writes to us and says, if you don't get why the 10 o'clock bar curfew tells me you haven't been out locally as I have been in bars late at night, the later it gets, the less regard for the COVID rules. Well, I understand that. I think we all understand that. It's why the rules don't apply to earlier in the day as well, when there are also a lot of people there. And don't forget, this doesn't only apply to bars. It also applies to gyms and other places as well, including your dinner table. All right. John says, I'll take my lead from Joe Biden. He's not worried, so I'm not worried. All Trump is doing is further tarnishing his legacy, whatever that is. The entire world, including much of Trump's, is moving on. Trump will be carried out by the inevitable tide. Resistance is futile. Then we check in with Susan. Please tell Linda that, yes, the local versions of the Proud Boys are out and making themselves visible. There was a group of young men waving large Trump 2020 flags yesterday on the corner of Route 20 and Route 203 in Nassau and Rensselaer County all day yesterday, without masks, of course.
Were they violent? Because if they weren't, they were exercising their First Amendment rights, period.
Nancy's,
and that's not what I was talking about.
Right. Nancy says, how could Trump run for president in 2016 with so many serious pending lawsuits? Trump University for one. I guess we're going way back on that letter. Okay. This is from Sean. Love the panel. Listen every day. But you are way conservative Republicans. Go to work, pay our taxes, and obey the law. There will be no civil war or uprising because we know the American people resoundingly said no to progressives and the Green New Deal and federal health care and defunding the police. 2022 could be a bloodbath for the Democrats in the elections, and they know it. Thanks. Have a great day, Sean. That was nice. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Jennifer Burns, and Linda Ellerbe. We welcome your letters, and we'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Jennifer Burns, and Linda Ellerbe, very nice to have you with us on this Thursday morning. So we should mention that the president-elect has chosen Rob Klain to run the White House. He has been named officially the White House Chief of Staff, sending an early signal that he intends to rely heavily, meaning the vice president and president-elect, that he intends to rely heavily on experience, competence, and political agility after a Trump presidency that prized flashiness and personality. Alan.
Not only that, but that fires everybody. I mean, we have no sense of permanence. You appoint a guy like Klain, you are basically saying, this is going to be my guy. And he won't be out the first time I'm insulted by him. He'll give me the best advice he can. I think it was a very good appointment. I have to say, when I first heard about it, I said, who he? You know, I don't know him.
Yeah.
It's like you and the Oklahoma senator. but the truth of the matter is, first in his class at Harvard, the editor of the Harvard Law Review, in several administrations, giving crucial advice. Sounds like a great guy to have the job.
Ira?
Yeah, I agree completely. This is a man who has experience. He and Biden are obviously comfortable with each other. We're not going to see five chiefs of staff over the course of a Biden administration. And I think Klain has been on in recent months quite a bit on the cable channels, perhaps MS the most often, because, and I think I'm correct about this, he was the guy in charge of the Ebola response during the Obama administration and indeed wrote all or part of the book that talked about pandemics that the Trump administration claimed it had never received or didn't read during the transition. So I think, again, this is just another smart move on Biden's part. He's putting an adult in the room with him. And in my view, no downside at all.
Jennifer.
I don't know what else to add. It seems like a good choice and a solid choice. And I guess I would add that, you know, Klain seems to have a history of working well with the other side, which is one of Biden's strategies here to move forward in environmental concerns and things like that as well for the climate change initiatives he has. And I think I read somewhere as I was digging into things that Klain's wife is heavily involved in environmental policy and consulting and things like that. So he's, I would say, centered maybe, or he's got a role in every single thing in a solid historical way that Biden is trying to push forward.
And Linda, nothing, as you were talking about boring earlier, but nothing wrong with a steady hand, right?
No, you're boring in a good way. Look, we voted for steady because we need steady. We are emotionally exhausted in this country. Biden is doing exactly what we asked him to do. Steady. Steady hand, building up a steady team. I got no complaints at all right now.
We also want to look at the this was a little exercise that was done in the New York Times. I just have to find this real quick. My apologies. This is a thought experiment put forward by the New York Times. The political scientist Brendan Nyhan, who has often responded to events during the Trump presidency by asking a certain question: what would you say if you saw it in another country? So the New York Times says, let's try that exercise now. Imagine that a president of another country lost an election and refused to concede defeat. Instead, he lied about the vote count. He then filed lawsuits to have ballots thrown out, put pressure on other officials to back him up, and use the power of government to prevent a transition of power from starting. How would you describe this behavior? It's certainly anti-democratic. It is an attempt to overrule the will of the people, ignore a country's laws, and illegitimately grab political power. So then the Times went one step further and asked political scientists and historians for analogies, and they offered a few, looking at Mexico and Zimbabwe, Russia, and the list goes on and on. But it is interesting when you put it in that perspective, Ira, of what would you say if you saw it in another country?
Yeah, somebody said this the other day, so I'm not going to take credit for it. But this is the sort of thing that Jimmy Carter went around the world observing elections to prevent. And sadly, we need somebody here right now for that. So that's what I would think about it.
And Alan, this gets back to your overall point of that we have to take this stuff seriously.
I think we really do. I mean, he's not giving up. You know, they're hand counting ballots again in Georgia. So let me ask you a question. What if that count comes out differently in Trump's favor? Now, what if these thousands of votes are obviated? You know, are we going to put our hands over our noses and say, oh, God. Now, do I think that's going to happen? No, I don't. I absolutely don't. But on the other hand, he's not done by any means now. And when you have Republicans in high-powered positions and so many United States senators, for example, are not having the guts to say what the unknown senator from, you know, this unknown senator from Oklahoma had to say, you really wonder... you really wonder what he's got in his bag of tricks next.
Linda?
I really, you know, what we would say if we read this about another country is, look, there's another tin pot would-be dictator. We've been saying that for years. We knew this, that he would steal if he could. He told us he was going to, would accept no vote other... You know, no election results if it didn't favor him. He said it, and he did it. Alan is right. He did what he said. He's told us what he's going to try to do. It's not a question of how we regard it. It's a question of what we do about it. And we've decided, I think, as a country, on vigilance and rule of law and a wait and see to get and transparency. I don't think these are bad decisions.
Luca asks the panel, and so I will direct it Jennifer's way and say, is Trump's behavior, when will Trump's behavior be called traitorous?
Oh.
I'm sorry, but it already has in my house.
I was going to say, I think it has. It just hasn't been called that way by, the word is his cronies and a lot of these other Republican, but also some, I'm not going to let Democrats off the hook here, because they may be calling what Trump's doing traitorous or bad, and maybe not using those exact words, but they're also not really doing a lot to stop it. So I think
what
people have been saying, well, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know the law, but Trump's team is using the law or lawyers in any way they can to stir up whatever they can and to find loopholes everywhere. And I think going back to what you said earlier, Linda, about being vigilant, I think Democrats really need to be vigilant in this same way and think or try to think along those same lines. Because, you know, we also, as we were talking about just the last point of if this was happening in a different country, how would we view it? We must remember that Mike Pompeo is spreading messages around the globe that are supporting what Trump is saying. And whoever is in his position when he is removed and Biden, you know, takes office is going to have a really difficult time, a very complicated time, explaining why Trump has not been identified clearly as a traitor, why Trump is not being prosecuted perhaps in many places or convicted of the crimes that he has allegedly been charged with. So this is not just us in America calling him that. This is also the reverberations of how it's going to play out in the world as they look back at our democracy.
I agree with all of that.
I think Trump had an opportunity.
Hold on. Well, go to Linda and then Ira. Go ahead.
I go back to the fact, and you're right about trying silly legal maneuvers, but so far they haven't worked. I found it most encouraging last week, possibly my favorite story of the week other than Biden's election as president, was when they went into court last Thursday, the Republicans, before a Republican judge about whether or not there were observers in Pennsylvania at a certain place. And they claimed there weren't, and then there seemed to be evidence there were. And the judge asked the Republican lawyer, were there no observers there? Didn't you have observers? And he said, well, there were non-zero. There were not non-zero observers there. Well, that's right up there with alternate facts. And the Republican judge looked at him and said, I ask you as a member of the bar, did you have people in there observing? And the lawyer looked at him and, not wanting to lose his license, said yes. End of story. Non-zero?
It is
non-zero. That's a new number.
It is a great
non-zero pounds since COVID started.
As you said, it is like the second best story of the week, although let's not lose sight of the Four Seasons, because please, that will be with us forever.
Right. That possibly is almost up there with Biden's election. That one was so good.
Alan, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just want to read you from the Constitution. Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or on confession in open court. So we're pretty sure that's not going to happen. Do I personally think he's guilty of treason? His relationship with Putin and with dictators all over the world? Yes, I do.
Let's see.
What about sedition?
There you go. Do we have that part of the Constitution set?
Well, it's defined as words or speech that incite people to rebel against the government or the governing authority. That seems to be a far more likely charge than treason. Words that inspire a revolution that overthrows a government are an example of sedition, an activity or communication aimed at overthrowing governmental authority. Hello.
Peter writes, why aren't people wearing masks? Because don't tell me what to do. I'm an American. It would seem that the real problem lies in the lack of civics education as well as poor parenting.
As well as stupidity. Yeah. I mean, they know.
Yeah,
we know your chances of dying are so much greater if you don't wear a mask.
And killing other people.
And how many people have died and on the way out have said, I shouldn't have ever listened to him? I mean, you know, there's a story in it all the time.
Absolutely. Gregory writes, could the fix already be in? It's my understanding that state legislators can send any electors they want. Please tell me I'm wrong. We talked about this yesterday. Alan, do you want to?
Nah, you technically you're right. I'm sorry?
It's just two states.
You're technically right. I don't think the people would sit still for that, not for a minute. But then again, I used to tell my classes all the time, the day that the Electoral College wins out over the popular vote will be the end of the Electoral College. Boy, was I wrong about that.
We just got.
I thought Trump had an opportunity for a layup that he blew, and he had an opportunity to be a statesman, which is not in his DNA, in that he could have said that, you know, ladies and gentlemen, I don't agree with these results, and I'm going to urge recounts and investigations and fraud, etc. But at the same time, I'm going to commit to the transition so that the potential new president has the information that he needs to have. He could have still come out of this with his base saying he's working hard, he's not stopped fighting, and he would have lessened the temperature on himself by looking like he is blocking the advance of a new administration. But in my mind, that would have been a layup, but in my mind, he's just not smart enough to take that layup.
Mm.
Oh, come on, Ira. It would have meant he had to give in and admit that he wasn't going to be the president anymore by doing that. You are so right.
Not if he said I'm going to fight to make sure that these results are correct.
You know what? Woulda, coulda,
we must
woulda,
be talking about some other Donald Trump. If you imagine those words,
well, that's right. It's not in his DNA. It wasn't him.
All right. Let's see. We just got this in, and I want to make sure that it is
kosher.
Yeah. Well, accurate. This is from the Boston Globe. The federal appeals court has ruled that Harvard's use of race in admissions is sound. This is a story that we talked about quite a bit on the show. The First Circuit Court of Appeals has affirmed a lower court decision that Harvard University's admissions process does not discriminate against Asian American applicants, likely propelling the battle over affirmative action to the U.S. Supreme Court. An opinion issued by the appeals court this morning found that Harvard's use of race in admissions met the requirements of the law. Appeals Court Judge Sandra Lynch said the issue before us is whether Harvard's limited use of race in its admissions process in order to achieve diversity in the period in question is consistent with the requirements of Supreme Court precedent. There was no error. Jennifer, would you like to talk about that?
I guess what I would say is that we've had a very long battle in America in different states and different universities and different businesses over affirmative action. And what I want people to really understand about affirmative action is that the idea that unqualified minorities are getting a handout into places where they're unfit to, or I don't want to say unfit, but unqualified, is just not true. Affirmative action does not work that way. And so when you have the idea that white people are losing opportunities because of it, it's not true. But also in this case, when you're looking at the suit that involves an Asian American saying they are being discriminated against, it's not true. See, with affirmative action in most places, they're looking at the percentage, like a demographic, and they're trying to match that with the national percentage of representation. However, it also means that for people of color or minority groups, they're all included in that one little piece of what counts as the minority group. So it ends up that minority people are fighting each other for a sliver of the pie that's not really interrupting, we'll say, the white percentage at many institutions, schools, colleges, businesses, whatever. So I want people to consider that information when they're thinking about affirmative action. And I do think it's very important that we all pay attention to inclusion in different ways, because all Americans experience different lives in America based on historical patterns and policies. And so therefore, it should be considered. Their history, their experience, oppression, achievement, all of that should be considered for jobs and school admissions. So we have a more diverse representative population in all of these institutions in America. That's my spiel.
Jennifer, what happens when it gets to the Supreme Court? Do you have a prediction?
I think, well, it's hard because the Supreme Court now is very conservative. I think that they'll reverse it favor of this student. And that'll be a setback.
We have anybody else want to talk about that story?
Just to say that was excellent, Jen. Thank you. I've never heard that quite as well explained.
Yeah. It is, and obviously, much more to be said about it, but it's a fascinating case. Saul writes to us and says, we have never imprisoned a president, but he could be convicted of tax evasion and will need to sell off some of his properties to pay his taxes and whatever fines may be imposed. I guess just because we've never done it before doesn't mean we can't, right?
I agree, and we've never had a bum like this one, I'll tell you that right now, who is clearly, you know, ripping off the system in so many different ways. No, I think if you don't put him in prison, if he's done it, and if you convict him, you have really set a very bad example for the American people.
Doug says, thank you all. We need to be vigilant. The man in the White House is a criminal who has not been prosecuted for his many crimes over his lifetime. Why should we be complacent now? Wake up, America. All right. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Let's talk about Georgia for a moment. Republicans muzzling anger. This is the headline in the Washington Post. Republicans muzzle anger over Trump's Pentagon culling, afraid antagonizing him could imperil the Georgia runoff. So it's now all about Georgia. There is a widespread alarm among congressional Republicans at how President Trump this week abruptly replaced Pentagon leaders with political allies and sent signals he might do the same in the intelligence community. But for now, lawmakers are refraining from overtly criticizing the moves for fear doing so could harm the party's chances of holding on to its two Senate seats in Georgia. Republicans' response to the ouster of Mark Esper as defense secretary has been noticeably circumspect, especially when compared with the explosion of criticism hurled at Trump when he fired Esper's predecessor, Jim Mattis, nearly 2 years ago. To date, Republican lawmakers have offered praise for Esper's tenure and little else. Congressional aides say that the public expressions represent a concerted attempt to self-muzzle as the political party that prides itself in being strong on national security grapples with its fears of antagonizing an erratic and impulsive lame duck president while battling to keep control of the Senate. Sounds like a really good Nancy Drew novel, doesn't it?
Right.
Alan, what do you think?
Well, this is a tough one. I think, you know, I personally believe the Democrats should fight with everything they've got to get those two people elected. You've got one appointed senator, one not so good senator. The people of Georgia are going to have to make, not me and not us in New York or Massachusetts, they're going to have to make up their minds whether you want to put handcuffs on this president. On the other hand, there will be people who, if the Senate goes Democratic, will be pushing Schumer and Pelosi in the other house to do everything that they can to move things left. And I don't know if the American people have that taste right now.
Linda?
I think that's a little bit of a mischaracterization. I don't think that a vote in Georgia is necessarily being voted on the basis of put Trump in jail. I think people are voting for their own interest. I think what we have to do there is organize on the ground more and try to explain to people. It goes like this. The Democrats need to get every vote they got and then more. Okay? The Republicans, same thing. Now, I have a good friend who lives in Georgia. She lives in Atlanta, but she and her husband have been quarantining up in the mountains. I spoke to her last night about what's it like to be in Georgia right now and be a longtime resident. And she said, for one thing, we are exhausted. You cannot imagine the number of ads, radio, in-person visits that we have lived through in these last few months from all sides. And we know it is all worse now. And our exhaustion factor is something the rest of the country needs to take account of, because there are people who are so tired they simply may not vote because their heads are spinning by now.
Linda,
and yet we all know that more money and more people are going into Georgia.
I need to hold you there.
That's where the game is.
We have a quick break.
And I want to come back. Joe.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Our last moments together before the end of the segment, and we want to get a lot in here. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Jennifer Burns, and Linda Ellerbe. Linda, you had the floor before we left. Anything you want to say before we go as we were talking about
just
the
briefly,
Georgia runoff?
And go on to other people. Let's just review the dates in Georgia. The ballots for the Senate runoff start going out November 18th. That's next week. December 7th is the deadline to register to vote in this runoff. December 14th, the early voting begins, and January 5th is the runoff, and then the counting. It is inconceivable to me that we will wait until a week before the election to make decisions. You know that the Republicans and Donald Trump aren't going to accept recount in Georgia or a loss. I have to believe that the Chamber of Commerce of America are going to step in sometime between now and maybe even Thanksgiving, because they need people spending around Christmas, and say, this can't be hanging over us. You're further going to crash the economy beyond COVID. Do something. Settle this.
Great point. Alan.
Joe, if I may. Linda, I just think I heard something that you said, and I don't remember having said that. You either implied or whatever that I had said that the Georgia election was all about whether Donald Trump should go to jail. I don't think I ever said
that. Oh, no. Yes, I did think you said that. I'm sorry. I apologize if I misunderstood. It wouldn't be my first time.
No, what I think is Donald Trump should go to jail, but not based on the election yet.
What I thought you were saying was that if we take the Senate, that means people are voting for Donald Trump to go to jail.
No.
Didn't think that that was necessarily why they were voting. Not to
I
put
couldn't
him
agree
in jail.
With you more. No.
Yeah. My mistake.
Ira.
Well, you know, I'm going to put on a very rare hat for me, and that's the Pollyanna hat. And I had for a long time.
But you look
time,
so damn cute in it.
Yes. Covers up the bald spot.
Yeah.
I was under the belief that now that McConnell has been reelected and he's got 6 years now and presumably will fade away at that time because he'll be rather elderly by then, that he would
before.
Find the cojones to what's that?
I said or before, as I've said many times, God does have term limits.
Under what I guess I'm now saying is a misguided belief. That McConnell would be willing to deal with Biden, that there were two, these were two old hands of the
yeah.
Senate, that McConnell would like to get something done that does not require a Trump approval, and so on. Thus the makeup of the Senate, while not obviously important, would not be quite as important because there would be some movement in the Senate and some bills would be passed. I guess I lost with that little bit of Pollyanna when I saw McConnell backing Trump in his efforts to have the recount, et cetera. So it goes back to where we started. This is an extremely important election. He won by 14,000 votes. I think Stacey Abrams has a lot of credit due, given her organizing abilities. And I just wonder whether they can catch lightning in a bottle to do this all over again. People waited in line for hours to vote for president. Were they going to be willing to vote wait for hours to vote for this Senate race, as important as it is? So it's a lot of words saying, I don't know what's going to happen, but it's damn important.
Jennifer Burns.
Well, it makes me wonder if some of this chaos and what continues to unfold here is going to encourage people to change their vote in this runoff, you know, and if more people will register to vote in the runoff. And so that's hard to determine at this point, but I think it's something to keep in mind that that could happen. I think it would benefit
Alan,
the Republicans.
Alan, do you rule out entirely what I posited?
Yeah, no, I want to disagree.
Could deal?
Yeah, absolutely. They have dealt in the past. If once Trump goes, McConnell will deal with Biden, no question. But I do disagree with something you said, or that I said, about McConnell, you know, being older and maybe subjected to God's, you know, wrath, which is that only the good die young, and so he probably will be there for his full term. I want to apologize for that.
Well, he would be. He's what, 78 now?
I believe so.
I believe he's 78, which would make him what, 84 when at the end of his term. So I would presume this is his last term. Although so Tom Thurmond kept going.
Who looks better, me or McConnell?
Do you have a chin,
Alan.
What'd you say?
I said you have a chin. You win.
Oh, well, that made my day. but Jennifer, back to what you were saying. I mean, just in the overall confusion of what's going on with the recount in this, I mean, we're not even done in Georgia on the presidential, and then we're doing this on top of it. It does seem that it's going to have its effect too, right?
I absolutely think it will. I mean, we're going through the holiday season. We know that this is going to cost money. We know that COVID is on the rise. It requires people to get back out there some more. And I think it's going to have an impact on who votes and how many votes and who they vote for this time. So it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds.
And it, Alan?
Fascinating. It's fascinating because you really don't know. There are a lot of Georgians and Georgia Republicans who voted for Biden. And they may be feeling, well, this is a good chance to reestablish myself as a loyal Republican.
On the other hand, if what the Democrats have to do, and many have suggested, is they have to do better with the Latinx vote in Georgia this time, what the Republicans have to do is deal with the fact that a number of the people who came out to vote for Donald Trump are cult of personality. Trump. And if you're trying to get them all to come out to vote for a Senate runoff, they may not, if it appears that Trump's not going to be president, Biden's going to be president, they may not come to vote. And the Republicans have to try to get those people to make sure that the base comes out.
Except that they have a better chance of doing that, don't they, Linda? Because there are more Republicans who have voted consistently Republican and who made an exception to vote for a Democrat for president.
That's true. I mean, I just did what I said was the other hand, because I think you're right. I think the other hand of it is what I'm saying is you're addressing the Republicans that did vote for Biden. And I'm addressing the Republicans that voted strictly for Trump, not for the Democratic Party or the issues or anything else. Strictly the cult of personality. The Republicans have to make sure that they get those people back standing in line voting. If those people see that Trump is not going to be president, are they still going to come and stand in line for hours maskless to vote?
You mean the untypical Republicans? In other words,
mean his base. I mean the cult of personality, Trump Republicans.
So it might encourage them to get out there. Because if Trump isn't elected president,
one hand, the other hand,
and on the third hand,
and a lot of money, and it's all going to be more in the news than it is now. This goes along, it's going to be Georgia all the time, Georgia on my mind.
Ira,
well, if members of the Trump, if the Republican base. Don't wear their masks because of COVID. They won't be around to vote, so the numbers will diminish.
Wrong.
The other thing too, and Alan, I'll begin this with you as our political scientist. But if you're a registered Republican or a registered Democrat, certainly doesn't mean you could walk into that booth and not split your vote, right? I mean, it's going to be
Yes, you may.
I mean, there could be a cult of personality of these four people who are running for this office.
Well, that's right. One race is the Republicans have a very weak candidate. The other one, a little bit stronger. So you could come up one short because you need both of them if you're going to have a 50-50 split.
Which is which, Alan?
If you think
the weak candidate.
If you think... If you think if I knew their names, I would have not given them, you would be wrong.
What, no. So the, on the Republican? On the, you mean?
No, no, yeah, the two Republicans.
Yeah.
So
there's
so,
Kelly Loeffler.
Purdue and Loeffler.
Loeffler is very weak. She was appointed. Okay. She doesn't have political roots other than the fact that she has a lot of money. So I think she's the easier one to knock off, to be honest with you.
But if that was the case, why didn't she win earlier when they were voting?
I'm sorry, say again?
Or if that's the case, then why didn't Warnock, you know, take the vote earlier or the first time that there was voting that went down a few weeks ago?
Well, he blames the alphabet, right?
And by the way, he's doing quite well in the polling. Not that that, don't even start. Not that that means a lot. But he is doing quite well.
Linda?
I think you all have said everything that I would want to add here.
It's late. Let's go.
Yeah.
All right. That's fine. I'll let you all off the hook. You're done. You're tired. You're exhausted. I get it. My
I
thanks.
I have to go back and go online and try to find myself a coupe. I have a Mini Cooper. Does that count?
Yes, of course. In this case, absolutely.
Makes me a.
And I'm going to go have a Cooper. And I'm going to go have a coupe of coffee.
Oh, a coupe of champagne. Now that is a word.
Well,
you can take Murray out for a walk, and you know what he's going to do. Never mind.
Yes.
Keep going.
No, all right. But you still get to make your poop joke. Alan Chartok, thank you very much. Ira
thank
Fussville,
you,
Jennifer Burns, and Linda Ellerbe, always a pleasure. We'll be back with the Congressional Corner after this.